The Ring and the Book by Robert Browning. Book 9, Part 3. So, happily, the adventure comes to close, whereon my fat opponent grounds his charge preposterous. At midday he groans, "How dark!" Listen to me, thou archangelic swine. Where is the ambiguity to blame, the flaw to find in our Pompilia? Safe she stands, see? Does thy comment follow quick? Safe, inasmuch as at the end proposed, but thither she picked way by devious path, stands dirtied, no dubiety at all. I recognize success, yet all the same, importunately, will suggestion prompt. Better Pompilia gained the right to boast. No devious path, no doubtful patch was mine. I saved my head, nor sacrificed my foot. Why, being in the peril, show mistrust to the angels sent to guard the innocent? Why rather hold by obvious vulgar help of stratagem and subterfuge, excused somewhat, but still no less a foil, a fault, since low with high and good with bad is linked? Methinks I view some ancient bas-relief. There stands Hesione, thrust out by Troy. Her father's hand has chained her to a crag. Her mother's from the virgin plucked the vest. At a safe distance, both, distressful, watch, while near and nearer comes the snorting orc. I look that, white and perfect to the end, she wait till Jove dispatch some demigod. Not that, impatient of celestial club, Alcmena's son should brandish at the beast. She daub, disguise her dainty limbs with pitch, and so elude the purblind monster. Eh, the trick succeeds, but 'tis an ugly trick. Where needs have been no trick? My answer, pho! Nimis incongrue, too absurdly put. Sententiam ego teneo contrarium. Trick, I maintain, had no alternative. The heavens were bound with brass, Jove far at feast. No feast like that thou didst not ask me to, Ancangeli. I heard of thy regale. With the unblamed Ethiope, Hercules spun wool in the lap of Omphale, while virtue shrieked. The brute came paddling all the faster. You, of Troy, who stood at distance, where's the aid you offered in the extremity? Most and least, gentle and simple, here the governor, there the archbishop, everywhere the friends, shook heads and waited for a miracle. Or went their way, left virtue to her fate. Just this one rough-and-ready man leapt forth, was found sole anti-Fabius, dare I say, who restored things with no delay at all, qui hod cunctando rem restituit. He only, Caponsacchi mid a crowd, caught virtue up, carried Pompilia off, through gaping impotence of sympathy enraged Arezzo. What you take for pitch is nothing worse belike than black and blue, mere evanescent proof that hardy hands did yeoman's service, cared not where the gripe was more than duly energetic. Bruised, she smarts a little, but her bones are saved a fracture, and her skin will soon show sleek. How it disgusts when weakness, false refined, censures the honest, rude, effective strength. When sickly dreamers of the impossible decry plain sturdiness which does the feat with eyes wide open. Did occasion serve, I could illustrate, if my lords allow. Quid vetat? What forbids, I aptly ask, with Horace, that I give my anger vent, while I let breathe, no less, and recreate the gravity of my judges, by a tale? A case in point. What though an apologue graced by tradition? Possibly a fact. Tradition must precede all scripture. Words serve as our warrant, ere our books can be. So to tradition back we needs must go for any fact's authority. And this hath lived so far, like jewel hid in muck, on page of that old lying vanity called Sefer Toldoth Yeshu. God be praised, I read no Hebrew, Take the thing on trust. But I believe the writer meant no good, blind as he was to truth in some respects, to our pestiferous and schismatic... Well, my lord's conjecture be the touchstone, show the thing for what it is. The author lacks discretion, and his zeal exceeds, but zeal, how rare in our degenerate day. Enough. Here is the story. Fear not, I shall chop and change a little, else my Jew would press all too unmannerly before the court. It happened once, begins this foolish Jew, pretending to write Christian history, that three held greatest, best, and worst of men, Peter and John and Judas, spent a day in toil and travel through the countryside on some sufficient business, I suspect, suppression of some Molinism in the bud. Footsore and hungry, dropping with fatigue, they reached by nightfall a poor lonely grange, hostel or inn, so knocked and entered there. Your pleasure, great ones? Shelter, rest, and food. For shelter there was one bare room above, for rest therein three beds of bundled straw, for food one wretched starveling fowl, no more, meat for one mouth, but mockery for three. You have my utmost. How should supper serve? Peter broke silence. To the spit with fowl, and while 'tis cooking sleep, since beds there be, and so far satisfaction of a want. Sleep we an hour, awake at supper time, then each of us narrate the dream we had, and he whose dream shall prove the happiest point the clearliest out the dreamer as ordained beyond his fellows to receive the fowl. Him let our shares be cheerful tribute to, his the entire meal, may it do him good. Who could dispute so plain a consequence? So said, so done, each hurried to his straw, slept his hour's sleep, and dreamed his dream, and woke. I, commenced John, dreamed that I gained the prize we all aspire to. The proud place was mine, throughout the earth and to the end of time, I was the loved disciple. Mine the meal. But I, proceeded Peter, dreamed a word gave me the headship of our company, made me the vicar and vice-regent, gave the keys of heaven and hell into my hand, and o'er the earth dominion. Mine the meal. While I, submitted in soft undertone, the Iscariot, sense of his unworthiness, turning each eye up to the inmost white, with long-drawn sigh, yet letting both lips smack. I have just had the pitifulest dream that ever proved man meanest of his mates, and born foot-washer and foot-wiper, nay, foot-kisser, to each comrade of you all. I dreamed, and in that mimic dream, impalpable to dream as dream to fact, methought I meanly chose to sleep no wink, but wait until I heard my brethren breathe. Then stole from couch, slipped noiseless to the door, slid downstairs, furtively approached the hearth, found the fowl duly brown, both back and breast, hissing in harmony with the cricket's chirp, grilled to a point, said no grace, but fell to, nor finished till the skeleton was bare. In penitence for which ignoble dream, lo, I renounce my portion cheerfully. Fie on the flesh! Be mine the ethereal gust, and yours the sublunary sustenance. See that whate'er be left ye give the poor. Down the two scuttled, one on other's heel, stung by a fell surmise, and found, alack, a goodly savour, both the drumstick bones, and that which henceforth took the appropriate name of the merry thought, in memory of the fact that to keep wide awake is our best dream. So, as was said once of Thucydides and his sole joke, the lion, lo, hath laughed. Just so, the governor and all that's great in the city never meant that innocence should starve thus while the authority sat at meat. They meant to fling a bone at banquet's end, wished well to our Pompilia, in their dreams, nor bore the secular sword in vain, asleep. Just so the archbishop and all good like him went to bed meaning to pour oil and wine in the wounds of her next day. But long ere day they had burned the one and drunk the other, while just so again, contrariwise, the priest sustained poor nature in extremity by stuffing barley bread into her mouth, saving Pompilia, grant the parallel, by the plain, homely, and straightforward way taught him by common sense. Let others shriek, "Oh, what refined expedients did we dream proved us the only fit to help the fair!" He cried, "A carriage waits. Jump in with me." And now, this application pardoned, lords, this recreative pause and breathing while, back to beseemingness and gravity. For law steps in. Guido appeals to law, demands she arbitrate, does well for once. O law, of thee, how neatly was it said by that old Sophocles, thou hast thy seat in the very breast of Jove, no meanlier throned. Here is a piece of work now, hitherto begun and carried on, concluded near, without an eye-glance cast thy scepter's way. And lo, the stumbling and discomfiture! Well may you call them lawless means men take to extricate themselves through mother wit when tangled happily in the toils of life. Guido would try conclusions with his foe, whoe'er the foe was and whate'er the offence. He would recover certain dowry dues instead of asking law to lend a hand. What pother of sword drawn and pistol cocked! What peddling with forged letters and paid spies! Politic circumvention! All to end as it began, by loss of the fool's head, first in a figure, presently in a fact. It is a lesson to mankind at large. How other were the end, would men be sage, and bear confidingly each quarrel straight, O law, to thy recipient mother knees? How would the children light come and prompt go, this with a red-cheeked apple for reward, the other, peradventure red-cheeked too, in the rear, by taste of birch for punishment? No foolish brawling murders any more. Peace for the household, practice for the fisc, and plenty for the exchequer of my lords. Too much to hope in this world. In the next, who knows? Since why should sit the 12 enthroned to judge the tribes, unless the tribes be judged? And 'tis impossible but offences come. So all's one lawsuit, all one long leet day. Forgive me this digression, that I stand entranced awhile at law's first beam, outbreak of the business, when the count's good angel bade, "Put up thy sword, born enemy to the ear, and let law listen to thy difference." And law does listen, and compose the strife, settle the suit, how wisely and how well! On our Pompilia, faultless to a fault, law bends a brow maternally severe, implies the worth of perfect chastity by fancying the flaw she cannot find. Superfluous sifting snow nor helps nor harms. 'Tis safe to censure levity in youth, tax womanhood with indiscretion, sure. Since toys permissible today become follies tomorrow, prattle shocks in church, and that curt skirt which lets a maiden skip, the matron changes for a trailing robe. Mothers may risk thus much with half-shut eyes, nodding above their spindles by the fire, on the chance to hit some hidden fault, else safe. Just so, law hazarded a punishment. If applicable to the circumstance, why, well, if not so apposite, well, too. Quit the gay range of the world, I hear her cry. Enter, in lieu, the penitential pound. Exchange the gods of pomp for ashes, dust. Leave each malicious haunt of luxury, the golden garnished silken couched alcove, the many-columned terrace that so tempts feminine soul put foot forth, nor stop ear to fluttering joy of lover's serenade. Leave these for cellular seclusion, mask and dance no more, but fast and pray. Avaunt! Be burned thy wicked townsman's sonnet book. Welcome mild hymnal by some better scribe. For the warm arms were wont enfold thy flesh, let wire shirt plough and whipcord discipline. If such an exhortation proved, perchance, inapplicable, words bestowed in waste, what harm, since law has store, can spend nor miss? And so our paragon submits herself, goes at command into the holy house, and also at command comes out again. For could the effect of such obedience prove too certain, too immediate? Being healed, go blaze abroad the matter, blessed one. Art thou sound forthwith? Speedily vacate the step by poolside, leave Bethesda free to patients plentifully posted round, since the whole need not the physician. Brief, she may betake her to her parents' place. Welcome her father with wide arms once more. Motion her mother to thy breast again. For why? The law relinquishes its charge, grants to your dwelling place a prison style, but gives you back Pompilia. Golden days, redeunt Saturnia regna. 6 weeks slip, and she is domiciled in house and home, as though she thence had never budged at all. And thither let the husband, joyous, ay, but contrite also, quick betake himself, proud that his dove which lay among the pots hath mewed those dingy feathers, molted now, shows silver bosom clothed with yellow gold. Quick he shall tempt her to the perch she fled, bid to domestic bliss the truant back. Oh, let him not delay. Time fleets how fast, and opportunity the irrevocable, once flown, will flout him. Is the furrow traced? If field with corn ye fail preoccupy, darnel for wheat and thistlebeards for grain, infelix lolium, carduus horridus, wilt grow apace in combination prompt, defraud the husbandman of his desire. Already, hist! What murmurs monish now the laggard? Doubtful, nay, fantastic bruit, of such an apparition, such return, interdum, to anticipate the spouse of Caponsacchi's very self. 'Tis said, when nights are lone and company is rare, his visitations brighten winter up. If so they did, which nowise I believe, how can I, proof abounding that the priest, once fairly at his relegation place, never once left it? Still, admit he stole a midnight march, would fain see friend again, find matter for instruction in the past, renew the old adventure in such chat as cheers a fireside. He was lonely too, he too must need his recreative hour. Should it amaze the philosophic mind, if one was wont the empurpled cup to quaff, have feminine society at will, being debarred abruptly from all drink save at the spring which Adam used for wine, dread harm to just the health he hoped to guard, and meaning abstinence gain malady? Ask Tozzi, now physician to the Pope. Little by little break, I hear he bids Master Arcangeli, my antagonist, who loves good cheer and may indulge too much. So I explain the logic of the plea wherewith he opened our proceedings here. Little by little break a habit, Don. Become necessity to feeble flesh. And thus nocturnal taste of intercourse, which never happened, but suppose it did, may have been used to dishabituate by sip and sip this drainer to the dregs of the draught of conversation. Heady stuff. Brewage which broached it took 2 days and nights to properly discuss of the journeys, sirs. Such is the second nature men call use, that undelightful objects get to charm instead of chafe. The daily colocynth tickles the palate by repeated dose. Old sores scratch kindly. The ass makes a push, although the mill-yoke wound be smarting yet, for mill-door bolted on a holiday. And must we marvel if the impulse urged to talk the old story over now and then, the hopes and fears, the stoppage and the haste, subjects of colloquy to surfeit once? Here did you bid me wind a rosy wreath, and there you paid my lips a compliment. There you admired the tower could be so tall, and there you likened that of Lebanon to the nose of the beloved. Trifles. Still, forsan et haec olim. Such trifles serve to make the minutes past in winter time. Husband, return then, I recounsel thee, for finally of all glad circumstance should make a prompt return imperative. What in the world awaits thee, dost suppose? Of the sudden, as good gifts are wont befall, what is the hap of the unconscious count? That which lights bonfire and sets cask atilt, dissolves the stubbornest heart in jollity. Oh, admirable, there is born a babe, a son, an heir, a Franceschini, last and best of the stock. Pompilia, thine the palm. Repaying incredulity with faith, ungenerous thrift of each marital debt, with bounty in profuse expenditure. Pompilia will not have the old year end without a present shall ring in the new, bestows upon her parsimonious lord an infant for the apple of his eye, core of his heart, and crown completing life, the summum bonum of the earthly lot. We, saith ingeniously the sage, are born solely that others may be born of us. So, father, take thy child, for thine that child, oh, nothing doubt. In wedlock born, law holds baseness impossible, since filius est quem nuptiae demonstrant. Twits the text, whoever dares to doubt. Yet doubt he dares. Oh, faith, where art thou flown from out the world? Already on what an age of doubt we fall. Instead of each disputing for the prize, the babe is bandied here from that to this. Who's the babe? Cuium pecus? Guido's lamb? An melibei? Nay, but of the priest. Non sed egonis. Someone must be sire. And who shall say, in such a puzzling strait, if there were not vouchsafed some miracle to the wife who had been harassed and abused more than enough by Guido's family for non-production of the promised fruit of marriage. What if nature, I demand, touched to the quick by taunts upon her sloth, had roused herself, put forth recondite power, bestowed this birth to vindicate her sway? Like to the favor Maro memorized, was granted Aristaeus when his hive lay empty of the swarm, not one more bee, not one more babe to Franceschini's house. And lo, a new birth filled the air with joy, sprung from the bowels of the generous steed. Just so, a son and heir rejoiced the count. Spontaneous generation, need I prove, were facile feet to nature at a pinch. Let whoso doubts steep horsehair certain weeks, in water there will be produced a snake. A second product of the horse, which horse happens to be the representative, now that I think on't, of Arezzo's self, the very city our conception blessed. Is not a prancing horse the city arms? What sane eye sees not such coincidence? Cur ego, boast thou, my Pompilia, then, desperum fieri sine coniuge mater. How well the Ovidian distich suits, et parere intacto dumodo castaviro. But language baffles here. Note further, as to mark the prodigy, the babe in question neither took the name of Guido from the sire presumptive, nor Giuseppe from the sire potential, but Gaetano, last saint to the hierarchy, and newest namer for a thing so new. What other motive could have prompted choice? Therefore, be peace again. Exult, ye hills! Ye vales rejoicingly break forth in song. Incipe parve puer. Begin, small boy. Risu cognoscere patrem. With a smile to recognize thy parent. Nor do thou boggle, O parent, to return the grace. Nec anceps here pater puero cognoscendo. One might well eke out the prayer. In vain. The perverse Guido doubts his eyes, distrusts assurance, lets the devil drive. Because his house is swept and garnished now, he, having summoned seven like himself, must hurry thither, knock and enter in, and make the last worse than the first indeed. Is he content? We are. No further blame of the man and murder. They were stigmatized befittingly. The court heard long ago my mind of the matter, which, outpouring full, has long since swept like surge in the simile of Homer, overborne both dike and dam, and whelmed alike client and advocate. His fate is sealed. His life as good as gone. On him I am not tempted to waste word. Yet though my purpose holds, which was and is, and solely shall be to the very end, to draw the true effigium of a saint, do justice to perfection in the sex. And yet, let not some gross pamperer of the flesh and niggard in the spirit's nourishment, whose feeding hath obfuscated his wit rather than law, he never had to lose. Let not such advocate object to me, I leave my proper function of attack. What's this to Bacchus, in the classic phrase well used for once? He hiccups, probably. O advocate of the poor, thou born to make their blessing void, beati pauperes. By painting saintship, I depicture sin. Beside the pearl, I prove how black the jet, and through Pompilia's virtue, Guido's crime. Back to her, then, with but one beauty more, end we our argument, one crowning grace, preeminent mid agony and death. For to the last Pompilia played her part, used the right means to the permissible end, and wily as an eel that stirs the mud thick overhead, so baffling spearsman's thrust. She, while he stabbed her, simulated death, delayed for his sake the catastrophe, obtained herself a respite, 4 days' grace, whereby she told her story to the world, enabled me to make the present speech, and by a full confession saved her soul. Yet hold, even here would malice leer its last, gurgle its choked remonstrance. Snake, hiss free. Oh, that's the objection. And to whom? Not her, but me, forsooth. As in the very act of both confession and what followed close, subsequent talk, chatter, and gossipry, babble to sympathizing he and she, whoever chose besiege her dying bed. as this were found at variance with my tale, falsified all I have adduced for truth, admitted not one peccadillo here, pretended to perfection first and last of the whole procedure, perfect in the end, perfect in the means, perfect in everything, leaving a lawyer nothing to excuse, reason away, and show his skill about. A flight impossible to Adamic flesh, just to be fancied, scarcely to be wished, and anyhow, unpleadable in court.
How reconcile, gasped Malice, that with this?
Your this, friend, is extraneous to the law, comes of men's outside meddling, the unskilled interposition of such fools as press out of their province. Must I speak my mind? Far better had Pompilia died at the spot than found a tongue to wag and shame the law, shame most of all herself, did friendship fail, and advocacy lie less on the alert. Listen how these protect her to the end. Do I credit the alleged narration? No. Lied our Pompilia, then, to laud herself? Still, no. Clear up what seems discrepancy? The means abound. Art's long, though time is short, so keeping me in compass, all I urge is, since confession at the point of death, nam in articulo mortis, with the church, passes for statement honest and sincere. Nemo presumitur reus esse. Then, if sure that all affirmed would be believed, 'twas charity in one so circumstanced, to spend her last breath in one effort more for universal good of friend and foe, and by pretending utter innocence, nay, freedom from each foible we forgive, reintegrate not solely her own fame, but do the like kind office for the priest, whom the crude truth might treat less courteously. Indeed, expose to peril, abbreviate the life and long career of usefulness presumably before him, while her lord, whose fleeting life is forfeit to the law, what mercy to the culprit if, by just the gift of such a full certificate of his immitigable guiltiness, she stifled in him the absurd conceit of murder, as it were, a mere revenge, stopped confirmation of that jealousy which, had she but acknowledged the first flaw, the faintest foible, might embolden him to battle with the judge, balk penitence, bar preparation for impending fate. Whereas, persuade him he had slain a saint who sinned not in the little she did sin, you urge him all the brisklier to repent of most and least and aught and everything. Next, if this view of mine content ye not, 'tis come to our triarii, last resort, we fall back on the inexpugnable. Submit you, she confessed before she talked. The sacrament obliterates the sin. What is not, was not, in a certain sense. Let Molinus distinguish. Souls washed white were red once, still show pinkish to the eye. We say abolishment is nothingness, and nothingness has neither head nor tail, end nor beginning. Better estimate, exorbitantly, than disparage aught of the efficacity of the act, I hope. Solvuntur tabulae? May we laugh and go? Well, not before, in filial gratitude to law, who mighty mother waves adieu, we take on us to vindicate law's self. For, yea, sirs, curb the start, curtail the stare. Remains that we apologize for haste in the law, our lady who here bristles up. And my procedure, did the court mistake? Which were indeed a misery to think. Did not my sentence in the former stage of the business bear a title plain enough? Decretum, I translate it word for word, decreed the priest for his complicity in the flight and deviation of the dame, as well as for unlawful intercourse, is banished 3 years. Crime and penalty declared alike. If he be taxed with guilt, how can you call Pompilia innocent?
If they be innocent, have I been just?
Gently, O mother, judge men, whose mistake is in the poor misapprehensiveness. The titulus, atop of your decree, was but to ticket there the kind of change you in good time would arbitrate upon. Title is one thing, arbitration self, probatio, quite another possibly. Subsistit, there holds good the old response. Responsio tradita, we must not stick. Quod non sit attendendus titulus, to the title, sed probatio, but to proof. Resultans ex processu, and results of the trial and the style of punishment, et pena per sententiam imposita. All is tentative till the sentence come. Mere indication of what men expect, and nowise an assurance they shall find. Lords, what if we permissibly relax the tense bow as the law god Phoebus bids, relieve our gravity at close of speech? I traverse Rome, feel thirsty, need a draught, look for a wine shop, find it by the bow, projecting as to say, here wine is sold. So much I know. Sold. But what sort of wine? Strong, weak, sweet, sour, homemade or foreign drink? That much must I discover by myself. Wine is sold, quoth the bow, but good or bad, find, and inform us when you smack your lips. Exactly so. Law hangs her title forth, to show she entertains you with such case about such crime. Come in. She pours, you quaff. You find the priest good liquor in the main, but heady and provocative of brawls. Remand the residue to flask once more. Lay it low where it may deposit lees in the cellar. Thence produce it presently, 3 years the brighter and the better. Thus, law's son, have I bestowed my filial help, and thus I end, tenax proposito. Point to point as I purposed have I drawn Pompilia, and implied as terribly Guido. So gazing, let the world crown law. Able once more, despite my impotence, and helped by the acumen of the court, to eliminate, display, make triumph truth. What other prize than truth were worth the pains? That's my oration. Much exceeds in length that famed panegyric of Isocrates. They say it took him 15 years to pen. But all those ancients could say anything. He put in just what rushed into his head, while I shall have to prune and pare and print. This comes of being born in modern times, with priests for auditory. Still, it pays. End of Book 9.